Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight's show is about the reckoning of Donald Trump, in a more subtle way, of course. By the way, I haven't heard from Albert since June 3rd, so I hope he's alive and kicking. However, he is occasionally posting YouTube videos. The jury is out on John and Ben, and Don will be calling in soon. To tell you the truth, if you're a Trump supporter, you'll have a hard time with this show tonight. And I mean that. I've been a little bit too forgiving. Now, we have had a caller from St. Louis call occasionally, which is fine. His name's Pianke. But your calling card is not just being black and voting for Trump. That's not your claim to fame. You need legitimate reasons why you support Donald Trump. And I'm talking to you now. You're not a great person if you support Donald Trump unless you're solely supporting him on the basis of pre-shaped policies that fall in line with conservative mantra that go far beyond the caricature of Donald John Trump. I'm going to read to you something that I fell upon in the New Yorker today by complete surprise, and I can build that on political science theory, which will make America a stronger nation, not put it back into a retro-type style atmosphere of the 1950s where nationalism is outdated. Upon the election of Donald J. Trump in November 2016, Obama made a very profound remark that said, we're going to have to redesign the social compact, and I know how to build a bridge to that new social compact. Now, you can translate that to John Rousseau, the social contract, and I will sum it up after my summary. I see Don on the line. Don, I have about a two-minute intro. The morning after Donald Trump was elected President of the United States, Barack Obama summoned staff members to his Oval Office. Some were fairly junior staffers and had never been in the room before. They were somber, hollowed out, some fighting tears, humiliated by defeat, fearful of an autocratic moving in with vans pulling up to the door. Although Obama and his people admit that the election results caught them completely by surprise, he said, "We had no plans for this." That's what one staffer said. The president sought to be reassuring. "This is not the apocalypse," Obama said. "History does not move in straight lines. Sometimes it goes sideways. Sometimes it goes..." A few days later, when I asked the president about this consolation, he said this: "I do not believe in the apocalyptic until it comes. I think nothing is the end of the world until the end of the world comes." And I'll tap on that statement too. Obama's insistence on hope felt more will than audacious. It spoke to the civic duty he felt to prevent despair, not only among the young people in the West Wing, but also the countless Americans across the country. At the White House as elsewhere, dread and dejection were compounded by shock. Administration officials recalled the collective sense of confidence about the election that had persisted for months, the sense of balloons and confetti to be released. Last January, on the eve of the final State of the Union address, Obama submitted to a breezy walk-and-talk interview in the White House with the Today Show. Ryan, self-possessed, he said, no matter what happened in this election, he was sure that the overwhelming majority of Americans would never submit to Donald Trump's appeal to their fears, that they would see through his simplistic solutions and scapegoating. Okay, I'm going to cut now to my, what I was going to say, in the beginning. The thing that struck me about this article in the New Yorker was when he said, "We're going to have to redesign the social compact, and I know how to build a bridge." Obama's policies factored into the future. The main reason that he struck a deal with Iran, which is one of George W. Bush's access to evil countries, is because just like Trump tried to forge through with North Korea, mainly only in a self-gratifying way, Obama struck a deal with Iran because he wanted that country not to be excluded and to be isolated from future medical supplies and food desperately needed to sustain the country, and also the embargo on trade. Also provided safety and assurance for the future. That's just one example. He also, no president who has any intellectual training at Ivy League schools would ever promote the policies of Donald Trump in the sense of nationalism, America first. And what I mean by that is anytime that you're initiating foreign policy or economic policy, like trade policy, America can only be first if our trade partners seek mutual gratification and respect. That's a given. By keeping us in an isolation bubble and only leveraging things to our advantage by dissing other countries like our longstanding European allies, Trump cannot create the atmosphere of future change and American security. The last point I want to make before I bring Don in is that what he was talking about, the social compact, on a negotiational terms in which America is divided like the like a veil, kind of like the temple that was split at the time of Jesus' resurrection. Trump does not have that smooth partnership in which he's trying to appeal to all Americans through his Twitter account or through his White House correspondence or through Sarah Huckabee Sanders. He thinks that laying down policy from the top, not in a constructive way, but in a way of him telling us how to act and respond, is a way that it's not a way to bring all Americans together. It's a way for us to either accept or reject his policies as a whole. But in the light of the bigger picture, he always factors himself and his ego and what he has to gain or lose from the situation, which is a blended mix of psychoses, if you really think about it. It's not for the good of America. It's for self-exaltation. And for all of you Christians listening tonight, the Bible advocates strong leadership within government, but it doesn't advocate suppressing other people in the world. And that is not the mantle that effective government leadership can provide. Yay, we have Ben in tonight. Ben, I'm so glad that you missed that introduction. Neither you or Don are on the air yet, but let me just repeat one major factor of my last four-minute speech. When Trump was elected initially in 18 months ago, Barack Obama said, "I know how to build a bridge to a new social compact. We're going to have to redesign the social compact." What that means in terms of 16th century philosophy by John Rousseau and 17th century by Thomas Hobbes is that the social compact is translated into the social contract, in which the operation of government only exists by the leverage and operational will of the people. Therefore, the public has to decide, and there has to be a consensus on how the government operates in order to protect and maintain our rights. With the election of Donald Trump and his pervasive view of nationalism, I do not see that happening on a holistic level. Maybe through mechanical tinkering, like the way he's tried to experiment with the North Korean leader, it could be effective, but he also has to develop a strategy in order for both countries to remain safe. However, Ben did miss the bulk of what I was trying to say, but I'm going to pull Don in first because he's been on hold for 8 minutes, and then I'll pull in Ben. Good evening, Don. Did you agree with anything I had to say about my theory on what Barack Obama's first impressions were of Donald Trump's leadership?
I have no idea. How's the weather?
Well, you better have been listening because you're a bad pupil.
Honey, that gibberish was gibberish beyond gibberish. I wish that I could tape it. Oh, I am. But
it wasn't gibberish. It was, okay, you're on mute for 60 seconds. I'm pulling in Ben. Hi, Ben.
Hey.
I'm shocked, amazed, and happy you called in. The thing is that I had found something accidentally in the New Yorker magazine today, and believe it or not, the remarks of Barack Obama on Trump's newly elected presidency were not all negative. So he was reflecting within 3 weeks of his – this was early on, like right after the election, he was reflecting on what a Trump presidency might mean, and he shared some of his views with the New Yorker. So basically he just said, "I don't believe in the apocalypse. It's not the end of the world." And he also said that a new social compact/contract has to be created in order, you know, for the nation to keep going on in a public kind of leadership.
Yeah, he's always trying to use words like social compact and social contract and democracy and stuff because that's his grassroots bread and butter. He tries
well,
to manipulate
without going straight to the negative, don't you think that comes from his days of, first of all, political training at Harvard? I mean, where he went to his undergrad and then later law school. I mean, don't you think he's kind of, he's probably touching on some of the same philosophers that I learned about.
You mean his grooming days, when people were grooming him to be a random president that came out of nowhere?
He's a community
organizer.
John, I took you off mute, but I don't know how early he was being groomed. It took him a while to become senator. Did I just go on speaker?
Not on my
end. Not for me.
Oh, Don,
hey,
I didn't mean to be rude, but if I spend six minutes doing an intro, and I know you walked around in 100-degree weather today, you could have something more viable to say than
hey, Don.
Ben didn't even hear the scoop, and he had something to say.
Well, the bot, Don,
I heard some.
After you re-synopsized everything. But the bottom line is that what is printed in a book and what is reality are kind of two different things. There's a naivete about Obama and the liberals of a beautiful life, and this is not, you know, a war, that things can get better. That kumbaya is totally against reality. And what he said back then to the New Yorker was just kumbaya for everybody else. And, he knows that, just like Ben just said, he was groomed by people who actually were dedicated to some sorts of destruction. And, that's just a fact of the matter. So whatever
okay,
was written,
can I,
whatever you
Ben and Don, that's a better analysis. Another person at that time who was doing a summary said, Trump, the frequencies of white rural life, the disaffection of people who felt overwhelmed by the forces of globalization, who felt unheard and condensed by the coastal establishment, yet Trump himself, by liberal consensus, was a huckster mogul of the social media age, selling magic potions laced with poison. So
who
I
wrote
think,
that?
It was a writer. Can you give me a second?
You got to quote that, right.
It was someone from the New Yorker making an analysis.
Sounds
okay,
like an
wait,
idiot.
Wait, you guys. Let's just get back on track a minute, okay? Let's get back. Richard Rorty wrote a book called Achieving Our Country, and he wrote, the non-suburban electorate will decide that the system has failed and start looking around for a strong man to vote for, someone willing to assure them that once he is elected, the smug bureaucrats, tricky lawyers, overpaid bond salesmen, and postmodern professors will no longer be calling the shots. One thing is that very likely to happen, that the gains made the past 40 years by black and brown Americans and by homos will be wiped out. Jocular contempt for women will come back into fashion. All the resentment which badly educated Americans feel about having their manners dictated them by college graduates will find an outlet. Do you think that's true?
No. Why are there so many
female mayors? I think that's a little strongly worded. Like, not every Trump supporter from rural America is a sexist.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all. That's another idiot that you quoted, but that's fine. I mean, answer this question. Why are there so many female judges, mayors, CEOs, and managers nowadays, more than ever before in history? If we're such a misogynist
Trump's considering two female judges for Supreme Court.
Exactly. That whole narrative is gone. I mean, that's just a 60s narrative that keeps being, it's basically a fairy tale.
I guess the thing that I liked from the article, and Don is the only one who had the benefit of listening to it, is when Trump won, Obama did not panic or freak out like the rest of the liberals. He said the world isn't ending. We're going to take it in stride, and the social contract is going to have to be remolded. Now, the only thing irks me about Trump is his appeal to pre-World War II nationalism. I really don't think his version of nationalism can work in a globally complex world.
That's a point right on end. Some of the things that he's done are positive. They needed to be done. It's just that he's doing them with a nationalist bent that is against anybody not of his color.
Well,
but
we're a nation. why not have a nation that's nationalist?
I think the strain of his nationalism goes, what I gather from his verbal effigies is that he feels like America's being dissed in some way, but right now Canada's being dissed with the steel tariffs. Like, they weren't trying to take advantage of us, but yet they're suffering now from his kind of, like, you wouldn't want to say reverse policy, but his newly initiated policy.
You think Canada is suffering? Canada is suffering?
Because they have much higher tariffs than they did before, and then they're cutting up virgin land in Minnesota to develop a new polymet mine, which is everything a Minnesotans are against because the Lake Superior National Forest has never been touched in that way. Congress approved 6,000 acres of land smack in the middle of the Superior Forest, and now it's going to be conditioned for mining, which is going to affect the waterways of Canada, Minnesota, and downstream to the Mississippi.
What would you rather have then? Would you rather have untouched land, or would you have people that need jobs to have them? Because
it's kind of a mixed bag for me because my mom grew up in a mining town, and after the iron ore was gone, they made taconite, and sometimes they close and open 6 months a year, like it's rotational, and that area has been oppressed forever. But in some ways, I feel like their time has come and gone. Like, they got most of the good iron ore up there. Now they're going to be doing copper nickel mining up there.
Well, do you like your electronics, or are you going to quit buying them because of the mining?
I guess if I didn't have electronics, I wouldn't be able to argue with you guys on the air once a week.
I would quit the. I would give up the show gladly if we stop mining. Mining is destroying everything that is beautiful on top of the earth. And we can.
How are you expressing that, though, right now? How are you expressing your First Amendment without using mining to express your First Amendment?
In what way? Because
right now.
I think what he's saying is if you didn't have the Blog Talk Radio airwaves, you wouldn't be able to express it.
I'd be more than happy to be a town crier standing in the city square. Just hear ye, listen to me, because I got the news for the day. That's preferable to me as anything that we've got. We've got a caucus system here in Nevada for our politics that is just the old-fashioned way, where people go to the caucus areas and they congregate and make sure that they have time to network and get the vote out. So, you know, we've got the caucus system. It works. I can't say it works fine. There are glitches in that. There's a mix of electronics and actual people that isn't completely fixed yet. But, the interaction of people is what's harming us, and that's what, they don't know what's going on. So that's
I thought that was a pretty good answer,
so
Don.
If we don't, If we don't have any,
I mean, Ben,
I
can vouch that Don does not use his electronics in a modern way the way you and I do, Ben. He's hardly ever on the phone.
Ever.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it doesn't matter if you have a cell phone or not in your pocket. It doesn't matter. If you go to an event with any kind of speakers, you think about each speaker at that event, it has a copper coil in it. Now think about that across the entire nation. Now think about that across the entire world. Where do you think copper even comes from? It has to be produced. So,
well, I
to,
know from previous shows, Ben, that copper mining you were talking about in Afghanistan, that's essential for batteries and electronics. Oh,
yeah,
and
copper
cars.
And lithium and nickel.
And cars, right?
Mining, it's actually
right.
Mined. It's not produced. And if you're looking at production as a man-made thing, it's mined. So
no,
yeah,
it's mined and produced.
Destruction... yes, mined and produced. Production is a part, subset of mining. But this is something that is destroying the world. We're reducing our climate. We're degrading our land, our water, all for the pleasure of having three-eyed, you know, four-armed kids. This is all poisonous and... it is not good for the earth or the people and the abundance and the matters in which we are producing it.
From a realistic standpoint, Ben and Don, I can see Ben's point too, that instead of the Canadians producing things that we need to import, why can't we produce it ourselves? However, I agree with Don in the sense that places like northern Minnesota, or let's just say somewhere in Idaho, where they've never mined things before, that's a risk too.
Right. There's also a happy medium. There's a happy medium between the state controlling things and making it safe for the people, and the government controlling things and pointing guns at people. So there's a happy medium between what it is now and what it could be. And, of course, the people that live there should be the ones respecting the land and doing it properly because they're going to have to live.
Well, I know Minnesota and Wisconsin are very careful the way they harvest and produce things, but I did have something funny to tell you guys. I'm sure Don's heard of this person, but maybe not Ben. There's a Native American woman called Winona LaDuke. She's run as a running mate for vice president with some radical person for years. She's probably been on the national ballot four times. Well, she bought two large parcels of land in central Minnesota because Enbridge in Wisconsin is building another pipeline. But this time they're cutting through a small portion of Minnesota. But she already bought the land that they're cutting through, and she's going to block it somehow. Just as you know, that other pipeline that went through the Dakotas was a big battle. So now there's another battle in the works for another pipeline. And I know it's going somewhere. It's going ending in Superior, Wisconsin. I'm assuming it's starting in Texas somewhere. So that's another battle. Within our state, God knows what other states are having battles.
Well, Obama started the Keystone, right? And he didn't get blamed for it one bit. Trump ended the Keystone, and the news was not focused on that either.
Yeah,
so
I thought the whole
Keystone
thing was scrapped ages ago.
Right, but the news didn't make you focus on it. You see what I'm saying? Like, if the news would have focused on it, you would have.
Right.
They control what you think.
Well, that's true in a sense because Wade Hawkins was on the show last night, my new co-host, And he met with somebody from ICE. One of his relatives works for ICE. He said, now, I don't know if this is true or not, and I wasn't there. I'm not a primary source. But the hype in the news about there are children being separated from their parents at the border, but it's he said that it's not as hyped up as the news makes it. However, I do know in Texas alone that the National Guard opened up 3 more military-style dormitories for families. And then on NPR this weekend, I did hear that about this one lawyer who was looking for this kid, and she was calling this 1-800 number that the DHS had set up, and they would tell her where the kid is located, but they couldn't give any contact information, and they could only pass messages. Well, later on in the segment, she did find the kid and talk to her, that kid. But for some reason, the DHS made it so complicated. It was kind of a little scary.
Well, okay, let's get deeper into the problem at the border then. Let's figure out why people from Guatemala and other places like that are traveling all the way through Mexico. They can't find one place in Mexico that's better than their own situation. So they come all the way to our border to go to a jail cell because that's better than the entire country of Mexico that they had to walk through.
Well, Pianke was on our show last week, the black Trump supporter, and we did discuss this. He asked, why couldn't they go to Panama where there's a military base by America? The problem
is, why couldn't they go to Belize? Why couldn't they go anywhere in Mexico? Why did they travel all the way the length of from south to north, the entire country, and couldn't find a place to live?
In their mind, they still think America has the best, this is my opinion, not the truth, America has the best medical care. Their kids will be immunized. They'll have a systematic way to survive. But only recently have refugees and asylum seekers been... They used to have an easier venue into the country than just plain old illegal immigrants. Now the situation's much more complicated. So my answer is I don't know why they're taking that risk.
Oh, no, my question was why can't Mexico actually come up with a plan, a solution? They traveled the
entire
length of the
country. Mexico does
have
some voluntary centers on the southern border because, remember, the Trump administration and others were stopping the caravans going from south to north Mexico. Caravans were trying to be stopped in some cases, including by Mexicans.
How many families did Obama split? How many children did Obama split from their parents? Wasn't this a law that dates back to the Clinton presidency? And now Trump's being blamed for it, and he made an executive order to fix it? Wasn't this Clinton's
deal? I don't
deal?
Think the Obama administration split families, and I'll tell you. I'll just repeat what I just said. In Nogales, Mexico, there's a port of entry.
He did, Jane.
A port of entry for asylum seekers in which they're supposed to be able to get in our country within 72 hours. Now there's a waiting list. And the last time there was a waiting list was in 2010 when there was an earthquake in Haiti. Don, can you mute the kid? For Christ's sake.
Yeah, no, they're muted. I'm at a baseball game right now.
Can you separate the children into a detention center?
Well,
I'm sorry,
that's the whole point. That's all right. Can you hear me?
Do you have proof of that, Ben, that Obama separated families?
Yes. There's proof.
My only proof is from news articles that actually make the point that it's the same problem that's being emphasized nowadays. It's the same problem that goes all the way back to the Clinton's law, Clinton's presidency. So why is Trump being blamed now?
Well,
I mean,
I have to go into Facebook and find I have to find a message that was sent to me by an activist in order to answer that question. So you guys keep talking while I look.
It's about
or just look for an actual article, not from a message from an activist. Because I don't want to hear it from
No, because he said that Obama was guilty of something. And he has more information than I do.
Go ahead,
Don. Hush.
Sorry.
No, all I...
To tell you the truth, we covered this last week. The whole episode last week was on immigration.
All right.
Well,
the bottom line is that this is nothing new, Jane. Wake up. The Obama administration and the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, they all had detainees, Hispanics. Now this is historic because this is including Muslims. It's including a certain religious factor, and the main thing is that this is something that's been recent and immediate. These detainees of the children, even though they have been separating them occasionally, didn't happen in these types of numbers. One, because it was deemed unconstitutional, and it still is until it's going to be looked at. But two, they've sent through, when I say they, I mean the Salvadorans, Hondurans, Guatemalans, they sent these kids up pretty much on their own.
Some kids have crossed the border by themselves. And that was the risk the parents were willing to take.
Right. Well, the thing is, though, is that the detention of them in this manner, with the numbers that is because of the immediacy, is overwhelming. And that's the problem.
Well, who's giving these parents an illusion that this country is such a better place for their children than their own?
To tell you the truth, the political climate here, if I were a Guatemalan and I lived in a gang-infested area in my country, if I didn't feel like I had any way out, I'd just go to Mexico. I don't know if I'd try to go all the way to the U.S., I don't know who's giving them this mindset.
Have you ever read the immigration papers with Mexico? Have you ever actually read the immigration papers? They sound racist.
Do you think I have? No.
Well,
and that's not what the show is about.
They are racist because you've got different cultures in Mexico, South America. They're all different cultures, different nations. They have, of course.
It's Mexico first.
Did you know 130 political candidates in Mexico have been killed in cold blood? They were running for office
and they've
been killed in the last 6 months. Who the hell wants to live in Mexico?
And that's exactly why they take the risk. And the risk is worth it. And even if they have to be in detention, don't think that those kids aren't grateful to a certain extent. To being in cattle quarters, in America, waiting extradition
to do. I'll take that and run with it then, Don, because the problem is that the Democrats, and I hate to group everybody together like this, but for the most part, the Democrats are the ones trying to use immigrants to sway votes. And one of the things that they don't want anything to do with is individuals' right to defend themselves. So why would they immigrate millions of people to change the law that allows you to defend yourself if these people are coming from defenseless countries and that's the reason they're sending their kids?
I know under the Obama administration that there was an increase in deportation and a stepping up by the feds to get rid of people who were illegally here.
Right. That's what we've been saying. You know, the bottom line is that this is nothing new. And to Ben's point, I'm not quite sure I understand the direction of that because this is a two-party issue. Both parties in their terms in office have garnered this type of behavior, and you know, and built part of their platforms on the notion that the illegal, quote unquote, illegal alien situation is bad for America. You know, all the California Dems before 1998-ish were praising the deportation of illegal because they're not, they weren't even then Mexican, but you know, Hispanics. But the bottom line is that I, as I said, I don't mind building that wall as long as they build one in Canada too, because Canada has right now almost a balanced, there's about 65-35 where most of the 35 coming from Canada. So, you know, we need to build a wall there too, and let's just make it all fair.
I have, Don, may I cut in for a minute and also try to get away from the main base? Ben, the reason why this problem has escalated is because Trump and his the Attorney General, Sessions, escalated a zero-tolerance immigration policy that said that anyone crossing the border, whether asylum seekers or not, cannot they're not going to get better treatment just because they're asylum seekers. That was the main reason this whole thing blew up in the face of the public.
Could you possibly provide that, Jane? Like, honestly, if you look at what the statement reads,
I'm saying that's what they escalated the policy, and I found a valid news source, whether you think it's valid or not, NBC. This is inaccurate. There was no widespread Obama-era policy of separating women, parents from children.
Then why did Trump
there
have to make
anything
an executive
widespread,
order to change
it? I remember reading last week during the last week's show that Jeff Sessions specifically said that there's not going to be any special protection for asylum seekers, which according to the Constitution, there is supposed to be special protections for asylum seekers.
Well, did you answer my question, though? Why did Trump have to make an executive order to change what's been going on?
I have to look back on page one of the article.
What were you talking?
He did it so he could stop the backlash. Because there was a policy in place. There was a policy in place, but maybe
where did that come from?
Well, I don't know. I'm not an expert on this particular subject.
Well, the thing is that the policy is still being crafted. There is no policy. That's the whole problem. You know, that the executive order has come from Trump himself, more or less. It did go through, I believe, I don't even know if it went through the legislature. Has the Senate and the House passed any kind of either immigration or deportation bill yet? I don't think so. I think that's why they, Mitch McConnell held them past their vacation days and are trying to hash out whatever they can hash out, primarily for the immigration subject. So this has not been played out. We're talking about something that hasn't been resolved, and that's the whole problem with this situation, is because right now there is no right and there is no wrong.
First of all, John's right in a sense, Don, because first of all, Don, can you get out of the, I'm going to have to mute you, I'm serious, if you don't get out of the noise area. Okay.
I'm muted.
Here's the deal, you guys. First of all, Ben, Don and I are not pointing the finger directly at Trump. You're just assuming that we are. We're trying to get to the bottom of it like you. But Jeff Johnson,
finger,
who served as the Homeland Security Secretary under Obama, said that Obama did not separate children and parents despite the enormous surges of unaccompanied minors and families that came across the border in 2014 fleeing Central America. The Trump administration separated 1,995 children from 1,940 adults from April 19th to May 31st,
okay.
A spokesman for the DHS.
I got a question then. With that, let's ask it. How many crises did the news focus on with Obama at our border? Zero. So the news gets to tell us what our crises are because of what they want to focus on?
Well, there was an escalation of divided children. I'm not denying the fact that the news is agenda setters. Nobody ever said that. I never said that myself.
Well, all I know is that Ben is right again. The news determines what people know or what people think. And when something is, like right now, this immigration thing is overly reported on the liberal talk shows and things like that. But the Benghazi old ass shit is still being talked about on the more conservative shows. But we've got propaganda.
Yeah, okay, let me just say this, okay?
Everything.
There is valid proof that there was an escalation of children being separated from families in the dates I just mentioned, from April 19th to May 31st. But
we
both of you
that.
Are right. There is some of my friends on Facebook and other social media reacted so strongly to what they thought was clearly an isolated Trump policy that they're practically bloodletting until the November elections. Like there were 8,700 demonstrations in America this week alone, and at least 1,000 of those demonstrations were in Southern California, where two of my friends went. I'm not necessarily following those demonstrations, but I just happened to see it on posts that people were making because they happen to be my friends who live in that part of the country. So there is a huge backlash, and you guys are going to have to realize that no matter who is exposing this media, that it is going to be a major election issue in the next coming months.
We know.
And let me guess, all the protests were saying, show me what democracy looks like.
Yeah, of course. This is what democracy looks like. So,
yep.
You know,
exactly.
The thing is that both polarized parties are pretty much toast. They're splitting up. They're going to have to be other genuses of parties and places that people can express their views and their, you know, life under a governmental sphere. And we're here in Nevada, and we're developing that purple party that eventually it is coming, because the millennials are taking over a lot of the reins, and we're giving it to them. We're giving it to them so that they can start learning how to govern, how to live, how to do things that are going to be positive for the country.
Why would you give it? Why would you give it to people that don't produce revenue?
People are revenue. People are, you know.
No, they're not. Dollars are.
Oh, sure they are.
If somebody can produce, then they become revenue.
Revenue
Don,
is
I have,
a whole lot.
Hey, Ben and Don.
Barter system lets people and materials and, you know, the insects, everything becomes, you know, some kind of finance.
I have a tantalizing statement from Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan said there are no such things as illegal immigrants. The only thing that illegal immigrants are willing workers.
Well, that's not true, because people that cross the border illegally become criminals. There's a way to do it,
why,
there's a way to not do it.
That's why I like E-Verify, because I've told this story before. Often as a kid, I'm down at San Diego border, and in the morning I see truckloads of pretty much white men bringing up. They were truckloads, busloads, carloads, every morning bringing up.
That was probably in the
1980s,
Don. Don, that was in the 80s.
It was in the 60s, 70s, yes, and it happens today. I don't know why.
No, it doesn't. It happens more discreetly through tunnels and stuff.
It's because they're already here. They brought up enough migrants there where they can work anywhere. They've got enough housekeepers. They busted some of these hotels in the country. We lose half the staff.
Did you know there's an exodus of Mexicans going back to Mexico? The ones who are already established and lived here 30 years, they're going back.
Right.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't beat the flow. It's not like it's more than they're coming in, because you'd have to know exactly who's coming in to know what their number is. You can never figure out who's coming in if you don't have a border.
California
has
no clue on the – they only have an estimate on how many illegals are there. There's way more than anyone can predict.
They sure like to be sure of their vote numbers, though.
El Segundo is 98% resettled illegals.
How do you think Maxine Waters is going to win again?
I don't think it's El Segundo. It's another city closer to San Diego.
Oh, Maxine. But
Maxine was in the news this week, Ben.
Low IQ.
I'm sure he knows.
I know.
Hey, listen, you guys. I have a quote from John Meacham. He's a historian. He said that, you know how Americans keep saying separating children from families? Well, that's not American. He said less than 100 to 200 years ago, there were, in the 1930s when there was the Depression, we sent a lot of illegal Mexicans back to Mexico. This one guy who was a novelist, he ran under the Socialist Party, but there was a big backlash against illegals during the Depression, and they got bussed back to Mexico during that time. And these types of policies have been going on and off for years in America.
Well, I just feel bad for the people that try to use the migrants to vote our rights away. They think that all migrants are good because they're going to come here and be able to be manipulated into voting a certain way with their agenda. But
I think even George W. Bush was kind of—he was kind of naive when he gave a blanket. Remember there was an issue about immigration in George W. Bush early term from 2004 to 08. No, I mean from 2000 to 2004, and he gave the migrant workers a blank pass to stay here without any fight about it. I was even kind of upset about that at one time.
Well, you know, all of this backfires, and, just like tech is going to backfire, everybody's going to be a goofball. But, Harry Reid, he insisted on, he lobbied for and got passed the 50-person rule in the Senate instead of 60. For Supreme Court judges, and that's going to come back. That's going to come back and haunt us probably. So there's unless we can get a real wave in the Senate, but we're looking at the fact that things that happen, think are progress, are regressive. And, you know, Ben was he's talking about the immigrants or the way that they come back and supposedly stuff the ballot. Don't get it twisted. A lot of these immigrants are Republican, and they will, you know, once they receive attain status, they're going to vote for the Republican Party and forget who.
I doubt it, because a lot of the – what makes me nervous about that is because a lot of them are very low IQ and easily manipulated. Because
but
they're
the
coming,
thing is that
– they're coming through out of fear. And the ones
right,
that are promoting social pleasures are the ones that are manipulating their votes. Say, vote for us,
right,
and your kids are taken care of on one side. And the other side sounds angry and rude about migrants, but what they're really promoting is individual security.
Yeah,
so
and that's the thing.
It doesn't sound good
when
you're in a group.
But that's the thing, though. Most countries in the world, but ours and a couple others, are dictatorial in some form or fashion. Monarchical, dictatorial, oligarchical, fascist, straight up. And these people are used to that. And the Republican Party represents that much better than the Democratic Party. It's, you know, like too much. They've got, when you've got too much, you don't know what to do with it. You've got too much, and you don't know what to do with it. And that's the epitome
hey,
of the Democratic
Don,
Party right now.
This quote right here gets to the very heart of what I was kind of trying to say at the beginning of the show, and I know Ben's going to cringe. The View interviewed a historian named John Meacham, but I think Ben's going to agree with what the historian said. So can you guys allow me to play the 60-second soundbite, please? 1 second.
I already cringed.
Okay, absolutely right.
And why is that working in this country of, you know, wonderful...
Hold on a second. I have to get back to the beginning of the quote. Hold on. Okay, 1 second. Here we go.
It seems to me that some of his worst policies, like Charlottesville, Puerto Rico, the travel ban, what's going on at the border, have one thing in common, fear of the other.
Absolutely right.
And why is that working in this country of, you know, wonderful democracies and what
it's,
have you?
It's working because it has always worked to some extent. I don't like it when people say this isn't America because that lets us off the hook.
Right.
What President Trump is the most vivid manifestation of some of our worst instincts.
Yeah.
And what I think is the fear of the other, the paranoid style, the idea that there's a conspiracy, that immigrants are coming. I mean, in the 1920s, we had 50,000 Klansmen march down Pennsylvania Avenue without wearing masks. There were 3 to 5 million members of the Klan not 100 years ago. And when people say, oh, somehow or another we've been hijacked in 2016, we weren't. We were pushed back. And to some extent, what the president's governing on is a politics of grievance and white nostalgia, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And fear.
Okay, so do you agree with that?
No. How could I agree with any of that?
But he said that in the 1920s, X amount of Klansmen marched down Pennsylvania Avenue without masks. So they were asserting whatever rights they thought they were asserting.
He was proving one point when he abandoned one point to say that. So why didn't he just finish the first thought? He had to jump to that. That's 45, I don't know,
I think what he was really trying
to...
This is nothing to be ashamed... Well, some people should be ashamed, but basically... There is a sense, and I'm not saying Trump holistically abides by this, but when people feel, even I lived in Los Angeles, right? I taught all these kids who had, they had first-generation parents here. Some were collecting welfare. Some were pushing carts, selling things. But there is kind of like an inner fear in some parts of America that somebody is taking something that you want, and I was in a store the other, I think it was church or a store, and yeah, it was a restaurant, and a lady said, can you believe these Somalians that they just come up to the welfare office and they get what they want. If they need it, they're going to get it. And they're taking away our money and our resources. She was probably between 65 and 80 years old. So in her mind, it didn't matter if a plain old Minnesotan or Wisconsin went up there who was poor and got it, that would be okay. But the fact that it was a foreigner, they took what she wanted and she had. It was her money being drained.
Well, okay. I guess I can see it from her point of view, too, because I share it sometimes.
I think sometimes she feels like a foreigner's coming in and taking, there's a limited amount in the pie, and they're taking a quarter of a piece of
there
a pie
a
when
limit.
They should only take an eighth.
There is a limit. That's the point. These people that are socialists, that are devout socialists, and they think that that's the way to go, they can't be a socialist on a local level and be a globalist at the same time. It's an oxymoron. There's only a certain amount of people that actually produce enough income to be taxed enough to feed foreigners. And if you go through any city,
I agree with you, and I lived in the state of 35 million people. Don and I lived in California. There's 35 million people there. The land is fucked up. It can't sustain water for all those people. And there are too many immigrants in our country, but should we allow only 5% Norwegians, 5% Italians, 5% Guatemalans? Like, how should we establish our immigration policy?
You didn't let me finish. So if you look at any city in the U.S., look at the homeless population. How can we provide for our own homeless people and still be fighting to take more immigrants in? If we have Americans that can't eat, why would we take more people that can't eat in their own country? How is that going to help our country at all?
Well, there is this. Go ahead, I'll let John answer because I've been talking too much.
No, there is enough to eat. That's the problem. We waste more food than damn near we consume in some form or another. So we have plenty of food to feed everyone, and there was no problem, actually. It's just the way
then
our
system is set up.
Then
why do people go hungry here?
Because they're not eating nutritious food. They don't have
no.
Part of it is
true,
they
Don.
Don't manage
people
their lives, Don.
They don't.
Homeless
they
people
zero.
Would rather smoke crack than eat.
That's a problem.
That's a stereotype, Gene.
People look at America as the epicenter of hope. We're the vortex of salvation. Where who's Don? Is that your phone? Okay, I'm going to mute Don for 3 minutes. I'm sorry. Okay, listen, guys. Right now, Europe is having a huge conference because Germany's thinking about sending some of those Syrians back. They can't sustain them all. Italy's up in arms because they can't feed all the immigrants. This is a huge problem. Don, you're not on mute, but you're on warning.
Well, that's because you know, when we talk about the Bible and everything else, the meek shall inherit the earth, this is it. You know, we're talking about drastic change in demographics and birth rates. People are going to have to get over it. And the only way to do that is not with nationalism, but with cohesive cooperation.
You're pivoting, Don.
The white man is going to have to—he's going to have to give up.
Well,
his
thing, Ben, that Revelation—the Book of Revelation says that in the end times, a lot of people are going to be moving to and fro about the earth. Now, a lot of these crises are caused by wars, and the Iraqi war caused a crisis. It caused ISIS, and ISIS invaded Syria as.
I haven't heard one thing about ISIS since Trump has been president. Now, is that the news' fault, or did they disappear?
No, that was my own brain talking.
So what happened to ISIS then? Where'd they go? They're gone now. What happened?
They're not gone. They're still
terrorizing
the
I haven't heard
the
about
Kurds.
Them in the news. It's not,
I'm not
helping
saying
anything
they're gone.
With the news.
There's like 16 terrorist organizations in northern Syria and the border of Iraq that are still harming people, but we don't even hear about our involvement in Syria, so that's part of the news's fault. They choose to tell us what they want. America's involved in the Syrian war, but we hardly ever hear about it.
Okay, I pointed out one thing, though. Don, you pivoted. From the beginning of the show, you talked about the wall. You want a wall along Mexico, you want a wall along Canada. And then you just now pivoted back to saying that nationalism is not the answer. So which is it?
The wall.
Do we have a nation or are we globalists?
Wall and nationalism are two different things. A wall
no,
is
they're
a
not
physical,
two different things.
Wall,
you can't have a nation without a border.
You can't have a nation without a border. You can have people there or you can have boats. You know, you got Chad. You can have all kinds. You can have all kinds of things that can
maybe we should move them all to Puerto Rico, for Christ's sake, where there's no electricity.
Not the worst idea in the world, because they will work and learn how to put electricity on. Donald Trump will come down, he'll buy a Donald Trump Puerto Rico, and it'll be just a beautiful place, you know, until the next hurricane comes. But, you know, for the
okay.
most part, we need to just, I didn't pivot from nationalism because a border is just a border. Nationalism is
Don's
not
really that big of a phony because he wanted to build a wall in Canada. He's been saying that for a year on our show.
Well, what's the difference between us and Canada if we don't have a border? Don?
First of all, we would never build a wall between America and Canada because the land is too beautiful up there. A wall would look pretty ugly.
And what would it look
okay.
like? Mexico has a
you can build
nice
a barbed
plant.
Wire fence. How's
oh,
that?
No. Canadians, don't, they know, they're deceitful people. They're killers. They will jump over that and build tunnels.
You're full of shit.
Okay.
They're
no,
British
they're
subjects.
Like
they're submissive.
Okay, I'm going to.
They're
I don't,
as bad as those damn Norwegians. Those Norwegians are just really horrible people. And,
well, you're not knocking me. I'm Swedish and Finnish, and I don't have
right,
hairy
no,
knuckles.
And they should. Oh, yes. Oh,
okay,
oh, yes,
by the way,
do.
You guys, we're only and making the show 75 minutes tonight. I know Ben's on a time crunch and Don's at a baseball game. So we have.
No,
okay,
I wanted
here's
to get
the deal.
To something Dave, really important.
Okay,
Dave
let's let
over.
Ben talk. I
Dave.
Promise I won't interrupt you. But, Don, thanks for sharing. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay, I don't know if you guys saw the grilling of Rosenstein this week, but I watched it when I was at work. Rosenstein got his ass handed to him by Congress, by Jim Jordan, Gohmert, there's a couple others, and I can't remember.
I did watch it.
Grilled
it. I watched the whole thing. You sent it to me. I managed to watch it.
He still didn't release the papers.
Right, exactly. But so the Democrats that were there were trying to distract from the meeting that was there talking about the border crisis. That's not what the meeting was about. The meeting was about the abuse of the FISA court. And why would the Democrats be trying to still protect Obama from his abuses of the FISA court during an election? What does that have to do with their agenda to protect Obama still after
well,
all this
if
time.
I remember
and
correctly, some of the Paul Manafort arrest and that other major guy who was arrested in the beginning, didn't they not correctly file papers in FISA over every, they were supposed to renew the papers every 3 months?
Well, Strzok was a crook. He failed a polygraph test. He was completely one-sided, biased against Trump, and he was supposed to be heading up some investigation. So They found a lot of evidence.
Can you give us an overview of what Paul Strzok's role was? Was he an investigator with the FBI?
He was second in command.
They're all crooks. They're all crooks.
You know what it really comes down to? This is just like anything else. It's a he said, she said game.
No, it's not.
No,
it's not.
Even Bill Clinton said that. Bill Clinton said in an interview this week that we'll never know what the impact of Russia was. He said something like the blowing of the wind could have changed the election.
And we don't know what was on that woman's dress either. So you're just in the dream world.
Did you really have to bring that up? You're not in the Me Too movement. You've exploited thousands of women.
Right, but the bottom line is that I left it before it was called exploitation. The bottom line is that we're talking about the FISA court has been the whole FBI. What are we talking about? The CIA, the NSA, they're here to destroy lives. They're not here to protect and serve or anything like that. They're altruistic. They're here to invade.
I guess what we should examine, Ben, is first of all,
I was kind of impressed by that
congressman who was drilling them with the questions, the one that you sent me the
Jordan?
YouTube video of. But the fact of the matter is president, never in the period of American history has a president been so much at odds with the FBI. Now, maybe Hoover was more dominant than a president in the past, but I don't really know where to go with this. Maybe you could explain in a little more depth what's going on.
Well, should he be friendly with the FBI, with the leadership that tried to undermine his own election? Should he just be friendly now that he won?
He's not the type of person to take heart to that much criticism. So, and the way that Donald Trump expresses his anger, I don't see how he could really present a poker face to the public. He's not very good at putting up a false front.
No, no, Jane.
When he's mad, people know it.
Law enforcement.
And he also tweets about who he's mad at. So, no, you're right. He should be mad at the FBI, but he should also explain in Obama-style language that let the investigation run its course and I'm not guilty, so it's going to come out that I'm not guilty and be professional about it.
He knows that taxpayers are pissed off and tired of paying for crap. Why should he be friendly about it in a quote-unquote Obama-style language? F Obama. Everybody knows what he was. He was a big joke. I'm surprised
well,
the country stayed apart.
Well, you called him a moronic. You called him a moronic socialist, but you used to. You called him a moronic Marxist, and if with the slip of the tongue, you almost called him a moronic Muslim.
Like 4 hours.
I didn't say that. That's not even close to what I was saying.
You said in
a
text to me he was a moronic Marxist.
Exactly.
Well, The thing is
I'm just making a joke
that
if you would have not been carefully thinking, you might have typed moronic Muslim. But hopefully you're not a religious.
That's not even close. I wouldn't.
Okay, I didn't mean to insult you. I'm sorry.
He did have Muslim sensitivities. Get over it, Jane. But the bottom of the main thing is that he
don't
was
bully
not,
me on my own show.
I'll bully you any damn time I want. But he saved the country, even though I hated the way he did it. But he actually saved the country when he took over and made sure that we didn't go unsolved. Printing money is not your optimum choice.
He didn't save the country. He saved the career crooks. That's all he saved.
That was a part of the country. The career crooks had gone so deep into the deep state, into the dark money, that they were ruling the country. They were running America. And, you know, when you talk about speculation and hedging and all that other stuff that goes on in the banking system that's risky, you're talking about the core of the country. The biggest ripoff in the history of the nation was the housing crisis. And that displaced money from one segment of society to the other, and that was the beginning of the the real one percenters, the 15% that own 1% of the money. You know, that's exactly what happened, but he saved it in a way where at least we're still here and we don't have a credit rating of, you know, C minus.
That's pathetic. I don't think Obama saved anything.
Okay, Ben.
Obama,
you know how you
talk. That's all right. That's okay.
John, I'm
going to
have to mute you a minute. It's too loud. Ben, I have a question for you, okay?
Okay.
You say that you don't want to, when you come on the show, you're an intellect in a sense because you have proof of what you're trying to say. But on the other hand, you can't say anything nice about Barack Obama. Why is that?
I will never say anything nice about him because I've already learned too much about him that was not nice. I don't care.
Okay, well,
what
I've
he
said
did
okay.
That seemed nice.
I've said occasional positive statements about Donald Trump. I gave him credit for meeting with Kim Jong Un. I thought that was a breakthrough. There was a speech he gave a few weeks ago to the press in front of the White House, where he made some comments that I thought were valid. So I just think that. I'm going to take Don off mute in 1 minute, and then we're going to draw our conclusions. But my main comment is this. Both Donald Trump, who bickered at Barack Obama for not saving Chicago, and Barack Obama himself, at the heart of the heart of it, neither Obama or Trump has rectified the murder situation in Chicago and the continuing ongoing organic problem of police corruption and other problems that are circling around Chicago exclusively. So in that sense, we can look at the border, we can look at foreign policy, see their differences, but both have failed in that area, and Trump promised to do something about the rampant poverty and murder in Chicago.
Right, but Jane, you have to ask yourself a question before you try to blame Trump for it. Ask yourself a question. Has Chicago ever been federalized? It's still under the jurisdiction of an idiot mayor. So it's not really Trump's
Chicago,
problem. He can't go
like
above
the
mayor's
head.
Like
in the 60s and 70s, it was run by Mayor Daley. But there was something came out in the news 4 years ago about this police building that was what they would do is
Rahm
they
Emanuel.
Would come and arrest people who were maybe just like, some people had checkered records. Other people are trying
right,
to live a
you're
clean
not
life off
me
probation.
Right now, though.
They would come and arrest them, put them in this holding tank for a few days. They wouldn't follow due process. Like, they would hold them in like this police style holding tank that no due process was followed. And then when they were busted and caught, they were released. So
right.
Chicago is definitely a city that's out of control. And even if federal marshals went in there, the organic nature of the city.
My question was simple. Who runs that city? Rahm Emanuel, right? Chicago ever been federalized? Has Rahm Emanuel ever given up his authority and decided to federalize his city? No. So it's not Trump's problem. It's Rahm Emanuel's problem.
But
Trump's
Trump,
not going to come in and dictate
Trump,
for a city that has a mayor.
But Trump made a campaign promise that he would fix it. And he belittled Trump. He belittled Obama for not trying to help. Don, you're off mute. Don?
No, I'm trying to see you get out of this.
Don,
one.
You're the one who grew up 50 miles from Chicago, so do you have any comments?
Oh, I have a ton of comments, but you guys ain't listening, so it's okay. Bottom line,
I can't wait, Don. Let's hear it.
No. Chicago is in is one of the worst places you want to be. I had a daughter at DePaul Law School, and I grew up in Milwaukee. I already know, you know, just because I'm from Milwaukee, that it's a scummy place in general. But we've got it, you know, Robert Marignan is a horrible place, a horrible person. And I wouldn't want
any Why is
there.
That?
Because he was brought up in a situation, a lifestyle that was hard. And so, you know, he doesn't take anything for granted, and he takes his power, absolutely. So, you know, Chicago has been a demilitarized zone for a long time where there are pockets and of gang, heavy drug dealing that's given.
You're not backing me up very good, Don. You're not backing me up.
Well, no.
I was asking a question about is Rahm Emanuel doing a good job his way, or should Chicago be federalized? Because that's the only way anybody can blame it on Trump, is if it's not, if it's federalized and then it fails.
Yeah, but it's not being federalized. You know, Rahm Emanuel is still a disciple of Obama. So
are you saying that they don't abide by federal policies? Because every state in the country gets federal subsidies.
Well, no,
I'm talking about federal law enforcement.
Taking the manual the mayor out of the picture and putting in some kind of a alternative government. So
okay.
That's,
yeah.
You know, that's,
or at least law enforcement.
That, well, he's got too much power. All these people are crooks. You know, everybody who is Trumpetic has something on everybody who's Obamic. And everybody who's Obamic has something on people who are Trumpetic. So this is a situation where nobody wants anything to come out. You know, that's why we didn't cross. That's why we got Obama in the first place. America was already set on moving away from the George Bush term because he was one of the worst presidents ever. And in terms of
who
the fact that George Bush.
Well, he helped No Child Left Behind.
It doesn't matter. Who gives a shit? What are you talking about? That's the worst piece of legislation probably ever. And
I worked for it. I got to work under that contract.
I don't give a damn
what you did. Homes.
I don't care. The bottom line is that.
All right, I got one more.
No longer,
I have one more
no
current
longer.
Thing to bring up.
Okay, I don't care if we go 15 more minutes, you guys. I just don't want to do a two-hour show tonight, okay? So go ahead, Ben.
Right. Okay, one more thing. It's current right now. Eric Holder is popping off at the mouth on Twitter right now. And not to say that he has any kind of jurisdiction over anything anymore, but he's saying this madness needs to end with the investigation of the abuse of the FISA court. Doesn't that sound like a guilty man?
What do you?
He was in charge of Fast and Furious.
Right. And Loretta, I'm not going to say he and Loretta.
Eric Holder was the Attorney General, right?
Yeah, and he was part of the Fast and Furious where they moved a bunch of weapons through the border to the cartels and then lost them all.
Right, and that's the same.
Like, whoops, where'd they go?
Maybe they went to secret training camps in Central America.
Well, they killed agents. I know some of those weapons killed our Border Patrol agents.
Right, and Andy
that's not cool. I remember that story now. It was at least 6 years ago, right?
Yeah, so he wants to bring himself out of the darkness right now to say stop the investigation? Doesn't that sound like a guilty person?
Well, maybe he's
We're
trying to be
guilty.
Like Donald Trump and
Please.
Voice his concerns
Please.
On Twitter.
You guys got to stop getting stuck on guilt and innocence. All of them get guilty at some point.
John, don't just generalize all the time. You have to be more specific.
And one more thing. Jeff Sessions actually did something huge, and there was the biggest bust of opioid traffickers in the history of our country. There's over 660 of them that went down. Opioid trafficking. I don't know. Google it.
I'm in favor for that.
Well, so the people that say that Jeff Sessions isn't doing anything, which is mostly the Republicans, mostly Trump supporters that hate Jeff Sessions because he's not doing anything, the biggest opioid bust just went down. So a lot of people should be paying attention to what's actually happening right now.
Only thing I don't like about Jeff Sessions is he looks like he came out of two generations ago with his mindset. People didn't like how he misquoted the Bible a few weeks ago. Like, his interpretation was pretty wrong.
You can't judge a entire branch of something by the face guy, by the guy that's supposed to be talking and speaking for the place. You can't just say that guy looks like an idiot, so the whole place must be retarded.
I didn't say that. I'm saying that I'm a Christian and I know the Bible, and the Bible says submit to government authority, so he is pretty much saying that anyone crossing the border illegally was not submitting to the government. Well, if they submitted to their own government, they'd probably all be dead, because all the governments in Central America are corrupt.
Yeah, I'm not going to agree or disagree with you on that non-quote from the Bible.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me anyway, so you're off the hook. I will comment on what you said. I'm not saying Jeff Sessions is a horrible guy. It's just that, and I am being opinionated, he does seem like a throwback in a sense. Like, he seems like a cultured Southern gentleman, but out of touch with mainstream America. That probably does sound pretty bland. I do want to mention to you guys, this is my conclusion, and then I'll let you guys do yours. Rahm Emanuel is doing two or three good things for Chicago. He lengthened the school day and added more than 200 hours to the school year, taking Chicago from having the least educational time of any large school district to being on par with its peers. And he's also working on improving expansion of prevention programs for at-risk youth, smarter policing strategies, and empowering parents and trying to unite parents and communities to reduce violence in their neighborhood. The fact of the matter is that the organic culture of Chicago, nobody can really, it's kind of like a Mexican cartel. Like, back in the 70s, there was an author named, well, he's actually current, but Louis Rodriguez wrote a book about the L.A. gangs back in the day called Always Running. He's a famous Mexican author. I think he was possibly born in America, but his parents are Mexican. Basically, back before the Rodney King riots, there was a time in L.A. where the gangs were stronger than the police. So Chicago doesn't really have, not one political administrator can change the whole culture of Chicago. There's a mentality there. And the poor rule their lives a certain way, and they illegally try to empower themselves, and that's just the way it is. But I do want to thank Ben for bringing up current events that we probably wouldn't have discussed had it not been for him. And I want to thank Don for being honest and not always just answering within the Democratic framework, but calling out people that he doesn't think are honest. So with that, I'll let you two do your conclusions.
You want to go?
Go ahead, Don.
All right.
No, you go ahead.
There's there are a lot of things that need to be taken care of, and you know, I'm out here trying to take care of them. Some of the things that I'm talking about are as libertarian as they can be, and we need to just develop a conversation that would be relatively free of calling people names. This is something that is not per se healthy, and it can be somewhat immoral because you're not giving anyone the fact that they've got their experience, their life, their lifestyle from which they get a position and need to live by it. So there's going to be a need for us to constantly think about the other person when we're talking, when we're making laws, when we're in the relationships, all those things. And I'm a lobbyist, so I have to be kind of in the middle of a lot of things, go down the middle path. I work on with both parties and some of the things that I do and legislation that I look at and either amend or supply. So there's got to be a way that the right in our country and those who believe in some of the things in money can converse and come to an agreement, some middle ground or at least some grounds that people could agree to just get to those points and worry about all this other conjecture later. This what if? What if we have a wall? What if we have fewer doctors providing opioids? What if we weren't going to develop lands that are going to be dangerous or commit to more climate change? You know, the fact is that I believe 28% of all carbon is absorbed by trees. If we continue to destroy the forest for, you know, hamburgers, that's not gonna make the world a better place. So people really have to think about money versus humanity. And I already know.
Hey, Don. That was an excellent. Can I just throw in one thing before Ben talks? Washington State in a certain city just ruled out plastic straws. You can only drink coffee now with sippy cups in certain areas of Seattle because of the plastic in the ocean is growing so big.
Right.
That's not why.
Doing that in California.
Yes, it is. China has like this giant thing of plastic floating around.
It's not why. It's because the straws are being used for drugs, and they wanted to eliminate the straw production.
Are you serious?
No.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, it is. That started in California.
On National
Public
Radio, they said that people have to drink coffee out of sippy cups in Seattle now because they won't make straws.
Yeah. It's the weight.
No, it's not. Seattle didn't come up with that. That started way down in California.
Don, stop ridiculing me. Go ahead, Ben.
Who? I'm not ridiculing
you. I thought
you
were teasing me again.
I'm ridiculing Ben. That's the most ridiculous shit I ever heard in the world because they want to stop. The only thing you do is
Don, if you want to ridicule me for that, then look at old news articles about straws and drugs in California. Because this happened at least 2 years ago. Now
well,
we've legislated.
Ben lives
cool.
in that part of the country, so we should give him the benefit of the doubt.
It's purely environmental.
No, it's not. People go in there and grab handfuls of straw.
Hey, Ben, do you drink at Starbucks?
That's how they were selling drugs. They would put it in the straws and cut it and melt it, and they would sell little pieces of the straw, melted at both ends, and they decided to quit offering straws to people.
You heard it first on Jane's Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, there could have been two different reasons. I mean, the Seattle reason for that may have been a mitigating reason for them to stop using straws. But California, from what I've heard, it was purely
Well, in Santa Clarita, the city of Santa Clarita, in 2012, outlawed plastic bags in grocery stores, Walmart, you had to bring a cloth bag to the store, only in the city of Santa Clarita. The last month I lived in L.A.
If you extrapolate what Ben was saying, then those bags should be outlawed because people are bringing in, 17 or 18 kilos of drugs. So I guess that's why they...
They were carrying bath salts and sniffing it in the Walmart bathroom.
The bags are pretty much completely useless.
We were just joking, Ben, about that part, obviously.
No.
The bags
fly around
in the street. They're ugly.
Thanks for joining the show, Ben. What were your final comments and thoughts?
My final comments is that I'm glad the investigation is still going. As long as we have a fair and just system going, I'm glad Jim Jordan is around to grill these people. I don't know what Rosenstein's agenda is, but I'm glad somebody's there to confront him. And I don't know what's going to happen with the investigation that's ongoing. I don't know what's going to happen at the border, but I'm glad somebody's pushing to actually get results. And
I will look into
that.
I'll look into that story a little deeper this week. I work 70 hours this week, but I'll make time for it this coming week.
Well, the biggest question that I saw was when Rosenstein was asked if he actually read the FISA warrant, and he could not answer that. So there was obvious abuse of the FISA court during an election. That makes the FBI an accomplice to election fraud. So, of course, when people get angry about the FBI working with, working against our country, that's a big freaking concern. When they're involved in election fraud using our own FISA court against a candidate, that's a concern. And the media can't just flip it around and say Russia did it, because that doesn't make any sense.
Clinton was overshadowed with Whitewater and stuff, I don't like the fact that there's an investigation hanging over a new president's head, be it Republican or Democrat, unless it was out-and-out treason. So I just think that, yes, it's weighing on me too, but... Even, like I mentioned Bill Clinton earlier, he's on a book tour this week. He even said the Democrats should focus on the midterm elections, not the Mueller investigation. So he's making reasonable statements, and he's a past president.
No, he doesn't want to go to prison.
Clinton?
Yeah.
We're talking about Clinton here. And those stupid Me Too people. Those stupid Me Too people brought up in his interview, should you have apologized to Monica Lewinsky? Well, I'll take it right out of the John Yoder playbook. In this case, Monica seduced Bill, and Bill had a weakness for women, so it's not his fault.
That's the He Too movement that should be coming up any minute now. The He Too.
There should be a hashtag movement. I wanted your butt, and I got it.
There you go. And that's the women's side of it. That's the model. The He Too movement.
I'm glad he's writing a fiction.
I made a joke to you guys earlier that Bill Clinton just published his first work of fiction, and I thought Ben would take the bait on that.
I did.
No,
didn't you get my response?
No, I didn't get it.
Oh, I said, well, his first work of fiction was his presidency.
Nope, I must have missed it, but when he got elected in 1992, I bet you were only 7 years old or so, right?
okay. I started paying attention really closely around then.
Okay, well, with that, let's end the show on a happy note. And I'm glad John didn't call in late because I have a big day ahead of me tomorrow. So anyway, just remember, if you don't like what the government's doing, buy a piece of land and protest where they're building the pipeline. With that, I'm going to play one of John's songs, and thanks for joining us. I'll see you guys next week, possibly. Goodbye.
All right. See you later. Bye, Jane.
Good night,
bye,
y'all.
See you, Don. Bye. See you,
help you when you're old. She's got the cushion for the pushing of a love situation. When she's talking to me, oh, she's looking at you. She says there is no other, no need to question why. She's always on the phone talking to another guy. Up, better watch out for the train. Blows it.